Okay, it's time for us to begin. Thank you for being here this morning. I'm glad you chose to be with us for this Bible class. And we're wrapping it up on these lessons on the home. We're going on God's design for the home this quarter. And we only have, counting this, we have four more classes. Okay? So after this one, it's only going to be three more classes. Okay? And so we're trying to wrap it up. What I'm going to do is this class and Wednesday night's class is going to focus on 1 Corinthians 7. I'm going to go as far as I can this morning, and then I'll cover the remaining section. Of course, I don't intend to go over the whole chapter, maybe all the way to verse 15 or so, and then just make some notes of some verses beyond verse 15. But I'm just going to get the general overview of this chapter, and it speaks on marriage. So it's pertinent for this topic of God's plan for the home. And then the last two classes, which means next Sunday and the following Wednesday, which is going to be the last class, we're going to do a wrap-up, a summary, and then a conclusion. Okay, so we're going to move away from this textual study beginning next week for the last two class sessions. And today we're going to focus on 1 Corinthians 7. There's a lot of principles and commandments concerning marriage and a beautiful teaching here we find in the Bible in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Okay, very interesting. In the book of Corinthians, the first six chapters is dealing with issues in the church of Corinth. And then from chapter 7 on, Paul is going to answer some general questions he was asked. And then he begins the section of questions with the topic of marriage. Okay, and this is where we're going to begin this morning. Okay, so we have questions concerning marriage. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. You can open up there if you want. I'm going to display, and I just noticed that some of the words I wrote or the sentences might be too small. I hope they're not too small. But hopefully we will work out for you, okay? But anyways, so we have 1 Corinthians 7. Now, the first verse, let me see if I'm on my... Okay, it's on the screen. Notice this. Now, concerning the things of which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Now, concerning the things of which you wrote to me, so that gives us the reason why he's writing what he's writing, because there were some questions that were sent to him, addressed to him. And we're going to see that he won't limit only to chapter 7, but he's going to continue to other chapters, other matters, other questions like the collection and so on and so forth. Okay? But it's important to keep in mind that this is a letter written to the church at Corinth. And do you remember what Corinth was known for in general?
Immorality.
Yes, Corinth was known for its immorality. Okay? Immorality. To the point that pagan worship not only endorsed immoral acts, but required them for those who went to worship the goddesses and so on. So immorality was something normal, okay? And this is going to play a key factor as we go through this chapter, immorality. Okay, so we also need to keep in mind they were new converts, new Gentile converts, maybe new Jew converts in the church. And then it takes six chapters before he finally said, well, I'm going to answer these questions. Why do you think it took six chapters before Paul went ahead and answered the questions? He could have gone ahead and just answered them right away in the first chapter. Okay, do you remember, when we begin the book of Corinth, the letter of Corinth, there was a report from those of Chloe, the house of Chloe, there was divisions among them. So he's addressing some problems they have first. And once he addresses those problems, now he goes and answers the questions. Looks like these problems were more important, or rather, they had to go first before he could answer these questions. Okay, the main problem, was this issue of carnality. Okay, carnality. You know, these divisions. You know, chapter 5. This brother who was in an adulterous relationship, carnality. Okay, so he's going to take care of carnality first And then he's going to go ahead and answer the questions. Because once this problem is taken care of, now this rest of these answers to these questions are going to maybe sink in better. Now, once you have the right attitude, once that main problem has been dealt with. Okay, carnality. So he's going to deal with the problem, the source of the problem. Now, something else to keep in mind. If you want, I'm going to read from Matthew chapter 24. Some sections from chapter 24 before I begin here real quick. But if you keep in mind, we need to keep in mind the context of what he wrote. Okay? Because we have right off the bat, we have a statement here that may seem to contradict other statements in the Bible, although it doesn't contradict any statements if we consider the context. Okay? But there was something going on in that region of Corinth, in that part of the world, some type of distress. And that reminds me of Matthew, for instance, chapter 24. Notice, I'm going to read just a few sections from verses 5 and on. And he's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem here in Matthew 24. He's going to give us an idea of some similar context that's happening in Corinth. But notice, and Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumor of wars." Okay? "See that you're not troubled, for all of these things must come to pass before, but the end is not yet come." You see, they're going to see that you're not troubled. There's going to be trouble by these rumors of wars coming. Families are going to be troubled. Persons are going to be troubled. Children are going to be troubled by this, what was going to happen at that time. And we know what happened later on. And then notice, for instance, from verse 15 and on, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountain." Okay? "Let him who is on the housetop do not go down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. I pray that your flight may not be in winter or Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be." Okay, so we're talking about a different region of the world. This is in Palestine, okay, what happened in Jerusalem. Now, here in Corinth, there's going to be this type of trouble, see? Some pressing concern going on, some type of persecution against Christians, more or less like the one mentioned here in Matthew 24. There's going to be trouble, there's going to be stress, there's going to be concern. So this is the context of these questions being asked. In the middle of all this concern, in the middle of all this stress, in the middle of all this trouble, what about marriage? That's the question. In the middle of all this, what about marriage? Here are our questions concerning marriage. What should we do in this case, concerning this trouble that we have? So that this is the context of Matthew, of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Okay? But then notice there. "Now concerning the things which I brought unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman." Okay? That's the first statement there. Okay? And as we see, the unmarried state is never commanded to those who have the right to marry. It's never commanded for you to stay single. If you have the right to marry, you are free to marry. Okay? You're not commanded not to. Concerning this statement, keep in mind the context. Okay? It is better. He's not talking about good as opposed to bad. Okay? He's talking about it is expedient for a man not to touch a woman. It is expedient for you. You stay the way you are and just wait until this present distress or concern goes away. Okay? So first option, okay? What about marriage concerning this present situation? Well, the first option for you is to remain single. That's the first option. If you're single, remain single. Okay? Stay like you are. It's nothing wrong if you're going to remain single. Remain single concerning the present situation. But we're going to see in verse 2, as we just turn in a moment to verse 2, But there's some conditions to remaining single. If you're going to remain single, keep in mind that you have to remain pure. Okay? Being single is not going to give you authority to live an immoral life like the rest of the Corinthian society does. Keep this in mind. Okay? And then, like this slang word we use, shacking up, is not going to be an option. Wait, but everybody in Corinth does that. Well, it's not an option. The Corinthian lifestyle is not an option if you're going to remain single. Okay? We're going to see that in a moment in verse 2. Because of immorality, let everyone have their own husband and then every wife have her own, every husband have his own wife. Okay? So we need to understand this on the context. Now, what about this phrase? It is good for man not to touch a woman. Okay? Now, we gather all the evidence in the Bible. We put them all together. Okay, someone can make an excuse, say, well, see, it is forbidden to touch a woman, so therefore we must remain single. We want to be holier persons or better Christians. Okay, but what about Genesis 2:18 when God said, it is not good for a man to be alone? Okay, now we put that in our notepad. Okay, we're adding the Bible verses. Okay, now what about Hebrews 13:4? What says that in Hebrews 13:4? Marriage is what? Is honorable in all, correct. And now, what about those in 1 Timothy 4, verses 1 through 3? What about those who forbid to marry? Okay, they're taking heed to evil spirits. That's what Paul wrote. Okay, so we're putting all everything together. Okay, and what about in Ephesians 5? Paul is comparing the relationship of Christ to the church with the relationship of a husband and wife. There's no way we can say marrying is evil or is bad or is forbidden. No one can forbid marriage. That's our prerogative. That's our own decision, whether we marry or not or remain single. Okay? So we take into account all the context. Now, real quick, who has the right to marry? Okay? This is called, and I'm just going to mention it real briefly. Number one, those who have never been married. Okay? Free to marry. Okay, now number two, those whose mate has died. Okay, and then number three, as we studied in Matthew 19, the last couple of class sessions, those, or rather the innocent mate of the one who has, the innocent mate of the one who has committed fornication. Okay, the innocent party of someone who has committed fornication. Okay. So we see there on the screen the three characteristics for someone to get married. All right. Other than that, the Bible doesn't authorize it. Okay. So there's a possible question here that we can infer. Maybe they ask him, is it expedient, okay, for the Corinthians to get married, seeing the present situation that we're going through? Is it expedient? So that might be the possible question, as you see there on the screen. All right, so let's go to verse 2. Let's try to move on this section. Okay, now notice, nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Okay, this just right off the bat tells us different principles from the Bible concerning marriage. Okay, now you want to remain single. Okay, keep in mind, you need to remain sexually pure. But if you cannot, to avoid a situation where you can become sexually impure, well, go ahead and just have your own wife, or you go ahead and have your own husband. That's what the verse is saying. So the second option is, the first option is not for you to remain single during the present distress. Well, then go ahead and get married then. That's the second option. We're going to see throughout chapter 7, Paul leans more towards the first option. Okay, for those who are single. If you're already married, well, you have a duty to your wife. You have a duty to your husband. Okay? There's nothing you can do. There's other questions that were addressed concerning what about those who are married? What about if we were not Christians when we got married, but then I converted, but my wife did not, what's going to happen? Can I divorce her because of that? We're going to see that as we move along the verses. Okay? So first thing we see is that this sexual union needs to be enjoyed within the confine of marriage. Okay? If there's no marriage, anything outside of the confinement of the of the quarrel or whatever we can call them, anything outside of that circle is going to be sexual immorality. Okay, so everything inside the circle is something command, is something given by God, something that we can enjoy. Okay, now we also see that the marriage relationship is a monogamous relationship. You see, each husband, each wife. So it's a monogamous relationship, and we also see that this marriage relationship is for life. Okay, so we see these principles here. So this is the second option. Now, some criticize this section and they say, well, Paul, he's being too focused on sexuality. See, because you see, these aspects deal with this part of marriage. And you notice, so far, we haven't dealt with this topic until now. When we see the responsibilities of a husband, the responsibilities of a wife, well, we have another aspect of the responsibilities here that we're going to see. But it's interesting some may criticize this. If we understand the circumstances, the context, we understand why he's focusing on this topic, okay, of marriage and what goes with marriage. But it doesn't mean that Paul never addressed other matters of marriage like love. Did Paul address love even in the First Corinthians letter? Yeah, chapter 13. Okay? Now, if you want to learn about loving your wife and wife loving your husband, you can go to Ephesians chapter 5. Okay? Paul is not being materialistic here, materialistic minded. Okay? He's just dealing with the aspect that has to do with the present situation that we're facing and the questions he received. Okay? So there's no grounds for any criticism over Paul. Okay, now notice verse 3. Now let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise the wife to her husband. See, if you wanna teach on equality and learn from equality of man and husband, look at this. It couldn't get any clearer than this. Okay, husband is an equal responsibility with the wife, and wife is an equal responsibility with the husband. Husband is not above in this sense, the wife, and the wife is not under the husband in this sense of responsibility here in the Bible. Now, there are roles that God gave the husband and the wife. The roles doesn't mean one is above the other one in the world before God. Okay, one has to be above in the sense that that's his role. He must be the head. Okay, and the other one must be following the leadership of the head in the sense of a role, a responsibility, not in the sense of who is more valuable in the eyes of God. Okay, so we see here this equality. So notice, before I mention something else, were you going to have a comment?
Just real quick, what was the present distress that he was talking about in 1 Corinthians 7?
Okay, we'll get to that as we move along, Caleb. We don't have any at least from the First Corinthians book, any plain description of what was going on.
Well, I usually have it written in my notes, in the side notes of my Bible. I understand that, but my point is, what was Paul actually speaking of in 1 Corinthians 7 that made it important for him to write to the Corinthians and say, hey, there is a present distress and these are the reasons why these things are so to you?
What?
I don't know that answer. That's why I'm asking.
Okay, yes. And that's a good question. I mean, what we can see is that there was something going on that they both were aware of, the Corinthians and Paul. I mean, it's not specifically mentioned here, but they both knew what was going on, and there were questions addressed concerning that situation. So that's the way Paul took it. I mean, they knew what was going on. Maybe in the questions, it was specifically mentioned, you know, there's some type of persecution against Christians from this pagan society. And then, what should we do?
So there's no biblical or historical evidence?
Well, I'm going to check on the history. I didn't check on the historical. I use Matthew 24 as a parallel in Palestine, it was the Romans who persecuted the Jews, actually, and they took Christians along the way. Those who didn't escape, but most Christians escaped because of the warning they took. But I mean, that's a good question. I'm gonna check if there's something historical. I didn't really check. I was just focusing more on the
Carpio?
Yes.
All of this time frame.
Yes.
As well as the persecution from the Roman government is about to increase tremendously at this time. And so that's going to lead to, of course, AD 70 and the destruction of Jerusalem as well, the uproar, uprising of the Jews. But all of this is going to lead to the demand for emperor worship and things such as this. There, the whole tenor of what the Bible says concerning this time frame, especially through the first century, is going to be historically is going to be definitely a present distress.
Yes. Thank you. That's good. Very good comment. Thank you. We have an idea, you know, in general history, Rome oppressed Jews, and they expelled them from Rome at one point, and they took Christians along the way as well, and then the Christian became public enemy number one. Okay? And that's something where we don't have exact, at least from the text, okay, but historically definitely. But I highlighted, for instance, in my Bible, the effects of this distress. Notice, for instance, if you're in 1 Corinthians 7, notice, for instance, in beginning of verse 26, the first hint we have. Notice in verse 26, 1 Corinthians 7, 26, I suppose, therefore, that it is good because of the present distress. Okay? Now, notice in verse 28, but even if you do marry, you have not sinned, and if a virgin marriage, she has not sinned, nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh. But I will spare you. Trouble in the flesh because they get married? No. Trouble because they get married in this time of this present distress. There's going to be trouble that he's trying to spare them from suffering. And then, for instance, in verse 35, notice, and this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. Okay, there's going to be distress, there's going to be trouble, and there's going to be distraction if you get married. Okay? And then, I think that's the last one I have. But anyways, okay, moving on. Let me move into another aspect of this text. Okay? It is important, as we see on the screen, to recognize, okay, the rights of both a husband and wife have towards each other. You see, when you're single, you have your own right. But when you get married, you are surrendering that right. It's no longer your prerogative to do with your body whatever you want to do. That's no longer it. If you want to take the stand, then stay single. You have the authority over your own body. In the Lord, of course. We're not giving permission to do anything immoral. Okay? But when it comes to marriage, now you're yielding, as we're going to see in a moment. Okay? So when couples get married, they have this obligation. You are signing a contract. You are obligating each other to fulfill every need, including the sexual need. This is each one's responsibility. Okay? Now, we see here that there are mutual responsibilities. You see, this topic of mutual responsibilities. Yes?
Yeah, just a second, because I want you to pause there and give me the definition.
Okay.
7:4.
Yes.
The word power is used. Now, that word in other verses is translated right, but that word can mean, that word can have several different definitions. What definition are you giving to that word power?
Okay, authority, I would say, or
if you're using the word authority, that's a legal term.
Mm-hmm.
That means there's a legally binding contract between the male and female in a marriage relationship.
Correct.
Well, that wouldn't be the case in a Christian marriage. It's not legally binding. It's a contract that you have one with another under God. So I want us to be careful how we use words.
Okay.
That word power, how is the Apostle Paul using that word power in 1 Corinthians 7?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean in a marriage relationship?
Okay. Well, thank you for pointing it out. Yes, just correct. Yeah, very good. Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it. What I wanna mention is, you know, there's mucho responsibilities. If you think about that word, mucho responsibilities, how many marriages do you think will be saved today if both husband and wife will fulfill their responsibilities? Don't you think that maybe marriages suffer because maybe, let's pick on the husband, maybe the husband chose not to fulfill his responsibilities towards his wife, and then the marriage breaks or suffers? Or maybe we can do it the other way around. Maybe the wife chose not to fulfill her responsibilities, and then the marriage suffers, because this is a mutual, it's mutual responsibilities here in the marriage. Okay, so a lot of trouble can be solved right off the bat if wife say, I'm going to fulfill what's required of me as a wife, and the husband say, I'm going to fulfill what's required of me as a husband. A lot of marriages can be saved like that. We see a lot of neglect. We see a lot of single parent homes, and so on and so forth. And a lot of it, not all of it, of course, but a lot of it has to do with one or the other one choosing not to fulfill the responsibilities. Okay? The thing to avoid is this self-centeredness, okay, in marriage. There's no longer self-centeredness, but now, if I'm a Christian husband, there needs to be self-denial, okay? Self-denial, yielding towards my wife, okay? Giving the opportunity to my wife before me, or the wife giving the husband the opportunity before her, okay? This self-denial, mutual responsibilities. But not only that, these mutual responsibilities, also, the husband is accountable now to the wife, and the wife is accountable to the husband. No husband is free to do whatever he wants and don't give account of where he is or where he's spending the money or what he's doing with his friends. He needs to be accountable, okay? Like, open, no secrets. You know what's going on, you know what I'm doing. And he knows what she's doing, where she's going, and there's accountability on both sides. There's this responsibility. You see, now if we think again of marriage who suffer nowadays, it's because one of them don't want to give account to the other one of what they're doing and keeping secrets and spending money behind their backs and so on, and going with friends and so on, and there's no accountability. So we see in this verse 3 this responsibility. Remember when Jesus said, "Render to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God." It's the same phrase, same word here. The husband render to his wife the affection that belongs to her, and likewise the wife give to her husband the affection that belongs to him. Okay? Same level, same responsibilities. When Jesus washed the disciples' feet, and we read about this in John 13, he said, "If I am the master and I have washed your feet, so ought you to do the same to one of another." You ought. Okay? It's a responsibility you have to do it one to another. Same phrase, same word here. Like the husband rendered the wife the affection due her, the affection he ought to give her, and the affection she ought to give him. Okay? So we see there's these mutual responsibilities, both have the responsibility before God. Yes. Okay. Now, it's very interesting. And you see on the screen that a wife or a husband, they may fail to fulfill their responsibilities to the point that they push their husband to commit sexual immorality. Okay. Now, is the one who withheld her responsibilities innocent? If the husband fell in marital unfaithfulness because she purposefully denied her due responsibility to her husband, is she innocent? It can hardly be the case if we use common sense, okay? Now, if the wife is fulfilling her responsibilities and then out of a sudden the husband is unfaithful, now she's innocent. Because she's doing what she can. She's doing what she has to do. But if she is, trying to take advantage, using, you know. And it's very sad that if a wife or a husband use their bodies to get something out of their spouses, they're in the same plane as a what would be the word? A prostitute. They use their bodies also to get gain. See what I'm saying? Wouldn't be any difference. Okay, just the type of gain they're getting. Okay? So it's hardly the case. I mean, there's much responsibilities here in this case. But anyway, so that's what I put on the screen. Now, going to verse 4. Okay? Let me click there, verse 4. Now, the wife does not have the authority over her own body, but the husband does, and likewise the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Okay? We're going to, you know, make clear that word authority, okay, at the appropriate time. But we see here something that I want to point out, okay, that we don't want to miss, that there is a perfect subjection one to another one. It's interesting how in Ephesians we read about the wife being in subjection to the husband, and that's correct, okay? But also the verse before, notice Ephesians 5:21. What does it say? It's on there on the screen. Ephesians 5:21. Submitting to one another in the fear of God. So there's a mutual submission. Okay? Yes?
Yeah, I think that word authority is correct. Because this is talking about Christians under the law of Christ. So, excuse me, the word authority would be appropriate because under God's marriage law, it is binding to the Christian.
Correct. Thank you, Brother Harry.
Nothing wrong with it. It's a legal term. It's
yes.
A legal, under the law of Christ, it is a legal covenant.
Correct.
And therefore, using God's authority is very appropriate, as well as the other term of power.
Correct.
It's the same.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Sister Evan. Yes.
I like how the Apostle Paul divided it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at verse 6, he says, "But I speak this by permission and not of commandment." Even Paul understood that there was a point in time in which he was speaking about things that would fall under civil authority and things that would fall under God's authority. And I think that we have to be very careful because passage 5:21 is talking about that God's commandment, how a relationship falls. By the way, submitting one another has nothing to do with the marriage relationship there. That's prior to the context of the marriage relationship. That is how we treat one another. And then he goes into the marriage bond and how that should happen. So we each have to submit to one another. The point that I'm trying to make is, Paul has a certain mindset when he's talking about marriage, that from our vantage point is split, because usually married people talk about what marriage is in this country and not single people. Single people have a desire to be married, but they don't have the same knowledge as the married person. That's flipped in this case, where Paul knows more about marriage than married people. That is Paul himself in this context, 1 Corinthians 7. So my point is, how does a person, how does God, who had the wisdom to give Paul that knowledge, be able to divide between civil and personal opinion, and at the same time God's law, all in the same context?
Okay, that's a good point.
All within the context of the present distress, which we mm-hmm. still don't know what it's about, because, not to disagree with that, but 1 Corinthians was written in the 50s, in AD 50.
Mm-hmm.
And the destruction of Rome would have been until the 70s. We don't even have record of persecution until at least the late 60s. So you're talking about a 10-year time span where it could or couldn't have been, persecution by some authority in Rome.
Okay.
So we're being a little vague with our understanding of 1 Corinthians 7 here.
Okay. We'll try to
be a little bit more specific then. Mm-hmm. Acts chapter 17, when Paul preached the gospel, there was a present distress in the uproar against him. Everywhere they went and preached the gospel, there was contention and persecution against them. And no matter which city that Paul went to, Corinth was no different than that. And so present distress does have to do with the definite persecution of the first century. And so the context began of persecution in Acts chapter 4, when they preached the gospel. And it did not stop with regards to the church, it just did not stop.
Correct. Yes, and just thinking about it, I mean, you live in a city where immorality is, it's okay, and that the Christians preaching immorality is wrong. Now you're going to have some enemies, okay? Even in your own family. Okay, if you're trying to say what you're doing is not correct, just like John the Baptist told Herod, it's going to create discomfort right off the bat, and maybe people will turn your back or won't greet you anymore, and then maybe that can escalate to some enemies. But okay, thank you for those comments. Appreciate it. Yes, James.
This is my understanding, but where when Paul says in 6, but I speak this by permission, not by commandment, my understanding of that has always been that what he's talking about before this, God did not, or Christ when he was on earth did not have to talk about this. He talked about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. So when it comes to chapter verse 6, Paul is saying, look, Christ did not speak on this. I'm speaking on this. I do not have a commandment by God to speak on this, but you ask the question. This is, I'd say, by the Holy Spirit, this is God's answer for it. And again, like I said, that's my understanding. I mean, I could be wrong.
No, absolutely, James. Thank you for pointing it out. That's what it is, correct. And we're about to get there to verse 7, I mean to verse 6 in a moment. That's absolutely correct, okay? Now, notice this 1 Corinthians 6, 19 to 20, also concerning the authority over our bodies. See, when we... notice, so do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? Okay, you see, once we become a Christian, we are not our own anymore. We owe ourselves to Christ, who bought us by His blood. For you were bought by a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. And then in 1 Corinthians 7, we're going to see also that if you're married, now you belong to your husband, and where you're married, now you belong to your wife. And it says, if you are single and you are Christian, you belong to Christ now. You're a slave of Christ. Either way, we're going to be yielding some of our prerogatives when we get married. Now we're no longer one, but two. Okay?
Rafael,
yes?
We've got to pause because, respectfully, because 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20 is in reference to the body as the church, Ephesians 1, 22.
Correct. Yeah, I'm not making a point. This is not concerning marriage. I'm
going to make the body into the personal body or the marriage body. That is handled earlier in that context.
Yes.
And that is not what is under discussion.
Correct. Yes.
Discussion is the body is the church.
I'm just doing a parallel. Correct. This in 1 Corinthians 6 is talking about the Christian and his relationship to Christ. Okay. Now 1 Corinthians 7 is just paralleling the wife and the husband. Okay. Just a parallel. I'm not saying that I'm supporting one based on 1 Corinthians 6. I'm just a parallel. Okay. We're slaves, either way, either to Christ or to our spouses. Okay. We're yielding that. That authority, okay? So, let's think about this. Some husbands say, well, I have my own rights. And I have to fulfill my own rights. And you must work to fulfill my rights. I'm the one who matters here. Is this something a husband might mention nowadays? Okay, might be tempted to mention. And I want to do what I want to do. I don't have to give any explanations to you. I'm the man of the house and I do whatever I want to do. And I want my rights. This is against what we're reading here on 1 Corinthians 7. Okay? The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband, and then the same thing towards the wife. Okay? It is selfish for the wife to say, I have my rights, and I want them to be respected. I want to be left alone, and don't deal with my matters. Well, that's not the case if you're married. Okay? So we see this aspect. Okay, and let me see if I can finish here, 1 Corinthians 7, 5, on this mutual agreement. And this is, we'll probably put a peg here. Now notice, do not deprive one another except with consent for a time that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, speaking about this sexual matter, it says, do not deprive one another. But there's an exception, okay, to this matter. Notice, it is wrong to withhold sexual relationship from one spouse to punish him or to punish her or to have my own way, and until you not do what I want to do, then I won't fulfill my responsibility. That's not correct. It is wrong to do that. Now, there's one exception. Let's say there's trouble in the marriage, and we think about it, there's trouble, arguing, shouting, throwing things around, and so on and so forth, and you say, what family are you talking about? Well, that's the reality. Okay? It happens all the time. It's saying the best thing for you is to give yourself to prayer, give yourself to meditation, separate for a moment. Even more, I would say, if you have children. Because if you have a house where there's a lot of conflict, a lot of shouting, a lot of yelling, you raise your hand if you don't remember your parents shouting and yelling that you forgot about it. We remember. We don't remember what was the argument about, but we remember that we're shouting and sometimes throwing things around. We remember when we were children, and you don't think that affects you? That's going to create some type of trauma as you grow up. It's going to affect your personality, the way you treat other women, the way you treat other men. That's going to affect you if you're growing up in a family like that. So it's very wise and pertinent to say, okay, there's trouble, separate for a little bit. Just think about it. Dedicate yourself to self-examination. Okay, pray about it. See what's your relationship to the problem. See how can you solve the problem. And see how you can get back to your wife, but for a period of time, and then go back. Okay? So see, here's the requirements. Number one, it must be by consent if you're going to do this. Both must agree. It's not going to like, I'm just taking off. Where is he? I don't know. He just took off. Where is she? I haven't seen her in several days. He just left. Okay? It has to be by consent. And notice number two, for a specific time. And this is really, really beautiful how we have, where Paul is putting an emphasis on this spiritual growth. There's something wrong in our marriage. We're having issues. We're having trouble. We're being carnal-minded. Okay? Okay, let's put an emphasis on spirituality. Let's separate for a moment, for a specific time, by mutual consent, and then let's take time to think. Let's take time to study. Let's take time to meditate, to solve the problem. Okay? And then when we have this willingness to examine ourselves, now we're going to find solutions to the problems. Criticizing your spouse is not going to find the solution to the problem. Okay? Constantly finding fault on your spouse is not going to bring the solution to the problem. But if you take time and analyze yourself, explore what's going on in your mind. Be alone for a moment, a few days. I don't know. That depends on you. And examine yourself. Read the Bible. Pray. Okay? And then come back together with a different attitude, with a different mindset, with a humble heart. And now ask for forgiveness. So you need to ask for forgiveness and fix whatever issue it is. And the marriage continues. Okay? So we're going to pause this on verse 6. Verse 5. And we're going to continue verse 6 next week. The Lord willing. Okay? Thank you for those who made comments. Appreciate it.